Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. Hey, as we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us. Tonight, on this revealing and exclusive episode of Light 'Em Up, we focus on a constitutional right that isn't often discussed outside of a courtroom, but is of vital importance in defending, protecting, and preserving your rights in our everyday society. Hey, raise your hand if you know a lot about your Sixth Amendment rights. All of your rights are important, but the Sixth Amendment is crucial, especially should you find yourself thrusted into the midst of the criminal justice system, having to defend your life and liberty. The Sixth Amendment has been described as the central feature of our adversarial system, but because the Supreme Court has so rarely articulated its meaning, the definition of a speedy trial has almost entirely been left to lower courts to decide. In this episode, our learning objectives will be to define, discuss, and think critically as we dissect the elements that form the foundation of the Sixth Amendment, with a special focus on the right to a speedy trial. Simultaneously, we'll shine our investigative journalistic spotlight on the case of Alabama versus Terry and Dunn and the case of Khalif Browder in the state of New York. Looking back, a significant amount of airtime on Light 'Em Up has been devoted to the case of Terry and Dunn. We initially met and spoke with his mother, Kim Keisha Johnson Byron, on March 20th of 2021 in our episode entitled, I Just Want Justice for My Son. The disturbing case of Terry and Dunn, an innocent young man charged with capital murder simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. As a follow-up on the continuing story, we sat for two other interviews with Kim Keisha regarding her son's case on July 10th, 2021, and May 23rd of this past year, 2022. You can find those episodes in and among our full catalog of Light 'Em Up. We're very proud of that body of work, and we value greatly the friendship and the familial relationship established with Kim Keisha Johnson from it. The state of Alabama v. Terry and Dunn, for those who are tuning in and haven't had the opportunity to catch our previous reporting on the case, centers on Terry and Dunn, a young, poor black kid with a high school education from Butler, Alabama, has been held in pretrial detention for 1,281 days and counting. There are serious questions arising from this case, including those of whether he had effective counsel and a speedy trial. Those rights are supposed to be afforded to every U.S. citizen through the Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. For the record, the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution guarantees a cluster of rights designed to make criminal prosecutions more accurate, fair, and legitimate. Ratified on December 15, 1791, the text in its entirety reads as such. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The Sixth Amendment guarantees criminal defendants five different, distinct, yet very unique rights, including, as just stated, the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury consisting of jurors from the state and district in which the crime was alleged to have been committed, the right to be informed of the charges, as well as the right to confront and call witnesses, and the right to an attorney. It wasn't until 1967 that the U.S. Supreme Court in Klopfer v. North Carolina, K-L-O-P-F-E-R, Klopfer versus North Carolina, held that the Speedy Trial Clause was applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment. Traditionally, the right to a speedy trial goes into effect only after the beginning of formal judicial proceedings. From arrest to indictment and indictment to trial, the right applies in its full effect. If the defendant is granted a new trial, the clock begins to tick from the granting of the motion for the new trial to the actual beginning of the new trial. The accused has the right to a speedy trial, but not necessarily to the right to have a trial speedily conducted and concluded. It also extends even up to the right to a speedy sentence, which falls under the reach of the right to a speedy trial. Rule 48B of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure states that the court may dismiss an indictment, information, or complaint if unnecessary delay occurs in 1. Presenting a charge to a grand jury, 2. Filing an information against a defendant, or 3. Bringing a defendant to trial. Not only that, but in Ross v. U.S., the High Court suggested that the extension of these rights apply to the period prior to arrest and indictment as well, thereby protecting and preventing undue exposure for the accused from unnecessary delay in initiating the judicial process at its earliest stages. As a quick example to that fact, a defendant could suffer exposure where the police have built and continue to build a case against him and are purposefully delaying arrest. This is a perfect time for reviewing the scope and applying the underlying principles of the Sixth Amendment. While the Constitution does not define a speedy trial, the Federal Speedy Trial Act of 1974 mandates that by 1980, the period of delay in all federal and district courts shall not exceed 100 days. Subject to a variety of excludable periods of delay. Since then, state laws have further provided guidance on when the right may be violated. As we'll see in more detail later on, in some states, the prosecution has a certain number of days to bring a defendant to trial after he or she has been arraigned on an indictment. The prosecution may be able to work around the requirement if they can show good cause for the delay or if the defendant agrees to waive the right. A violation of the speedy trial rule means that any conviction and sentence must be wiped out and the charges must be dismissed if the case has not reached trial. The time limits set in the act will be enforced by mandatory dismissal of criminal charges on the defendant's motion when the time limits are exceeded. The act imposes time limits for 3 separate intervals. First, for example, any information or indictment must be filed within 30 days of arrest or service of the summons in connection with an offense. 2. Arraignment of the accused must be held within 10 days of the filing date of information or indictment or of the date the accused is ordered held to answer and appears before a judicial officer in the court in which the charge is pending, whichever occurs later. And 3. Where a plea of not guilty is entered, trial must begin within 70 days from the date of arraignment. The mandated time limits are intended to define and implement the Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial and to enhance the deterrent value of punishment by making the administration of justice efficient and swift. Furthermore, reduction in delay would also reduce the time and opportunity available to persons released pending trial to commit other offenses. The time limits imposed are subject to numerous excludable delays, and the Act specifically states that excludable delays that are listed are not exhaustive. Although the Act requires dismissal of charges against the accused should the time limits be exceeded, the Act does not require that dismissal act as a bar to future prosecution. The U.S. Supreme Court analysis of the right to a speedy trial can be found in the case of Barker v. Wingo. W-I-N-G-O. Barker v. Wingo. In this case, you'll find a detailing of the statutory provisions. The Supreme Court first noted that the right to a speedy trial is generically different from any of the other rights enshrined in the Constitution for the protection of the accused for three reasons. First, the court noted that there's a societal interest in providing a speedy trial which exists separate from and at times in opposition to the interests of the accused. It noted that persons released on bond had the opportunity to commit further crimes, to jump bail, and escape, and that delay between arrest and punishment may have a detrimental effect on rehabilitation. The court also noted that if the accused cannot make bail, that too can make rehabilitation difficult, that a lengthy pretrial detention can be costly, and that society loses wages which might have been earned, and it must often support families of incarcerated breadwinners. Secondly, the court noted that the deprivation of the right may work to the accused's advantage. As the time between arrest and trial lengthens, witnesses may become unavailable and/or their memories may fade. If the witnesses were for the prosecution, the case may be seriously weakened, as the prosecution has the burden to prove the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Finally, the court noted that the concept is more vague than with other rights, in that the court cannot definitely say how long is too long in a system where justice is supposed to be swift but deliberate. The court could not agree on how long is too long of a delay in a trial, stating that there was no constitutional basis for holding that the speedy trial right can be quantified into a specified number of days or months. It also rejected the approach that the right to a speedy trial should only apply in cases in which the accused has demanded a speedy trial. As a balancing test, the court adopted four factors to be considered in determining on a case-by-case basis whether a defendant has been prejudiced by the lack of a speedy trial. Those are the length of the delay, the reason for the delay, the time and manner in which the defendant has asserted his right, and the degree of prejudice to the defendant which the delay has caused. Although the court agreed that the period of time between Barker's initial arrest and trial, over 5 years, was extraordinary, and that only 7 months of the delay was justifiable, the period during which a key person was ill, it ruled that Barker was not prejudiced by the delay, since none of Barker's witnesses were harmed by the delay, noting also that Barker, through his counsel, did not object to any of the first 11 of what would eventually be 16 continuances. We here at Light 'Em Up, we feel very fortunate to be able to offer you a very small portion of exclusive audio of the Supreme Court of the United States sitting and hearing the original oral argument of Barker v. Wingo from April 11, 1972, with Chief Justice Warren Burger presiding.
The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in number 715255, Barker against Wingo. Mr. Milliman, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. First, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. The facts of this case are
as follows. The signal for that, Mr. Milliman, will be when your white light goes on.
Thank you, Your Honor. The facts of this case are as follows. The petitioner, Willie Mae Barker, was indicted in September of 1958 for the murder of Orlana Denton, a vicious, heinous crime in which he was accused of bursting into a bedroom and beat her to death with a tire iron, with an accomplice, one Silas Manning, who becomes very relevant. His case was originally set for trial in October of 1958. However, there occurred a series of 16 continuances granted the prosecution in this case. Willie Mae Barker was not brought to trial until October of 1963, a delay in excess of 5 years.
When did he have counsel?
Counsel was appointed right after indictment, Your Honor. He was represented by counsel throughout this delay. We have no complaint in this regard. Petitioner...
receive notice of the motions for continuance?
Yes, Your Honor. He had full notice of these motions for continuances.
Does the record show whether or not he was present or whether
the record does not show whether he was present, Your Honor, for these continuances. There was no objection made to these continuances until 1962, at which point counsel started objecting to these continuances. But Barker was released on bail.
How many continuances were granted over the objection of your client?
I believe there were four or five, Your Honor. They began, the first motion to dismiss in this case was filed on February 12, 1962. And this is on page 9 of the appendix. And thereafter, the counsel for Willie Mae Barker at that time objected to further continuances.
There's some confusion as to whether or not it was 62 or 63.
Yes, Your Honor. The Kentucky Court of Appeals in the Sixth Circuit held it was 1963, that this motion was made February 12, 1963. Right. But and where they found this date, I have no knowledge. The record clearly shows it was made on February 12, 1962.
And the federal government's amicus brief gets into it a little bit, too.
Yes, Your Honor, but the district court, it's ironic, the district court on page 22 of the appendix pointed out that the motion was made in February 26, 1962, then talked about the resulting 8-month delay, but the delay was the resulting 19-month delay. So there is confusion as to this date. But petitioner was released on $5,000 bond in June of 1959 and remained free on $5,000 bond until he was finally convicted. Petitioner then appealed to the Court of Appeals of Kentucky, alleging he was denied his right to a speedy trial and other errors in the trial court. The Kentucky Court of Appeals affirmed the conviction. Then, later, petitioner filed this habeas corpus proceeding in the District Court for the Western District of Kentucky, which denied relief. He appealed to the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, which affirmed the District Court decision, and this court granted certiorari January 18th of this year. The Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit decided this case on two grounds. They held that petitioner had waived his right to a speedy trial by failing to demand trial, that the demand rule states that the right to a speedy trial is guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment is a personal right, which may be waived. So the Sixth Circuit computed only the time after the first motion to dismiss was made in computing the length of the delay, which it found to be 9 months, using the 1963 date. It also held that petitioner had not shown that he was prejudiced by the delay. Petitioner has therefore raised 2 points on this appeal. First, that the demand rule is inconsistent with constitutional safeguards and should not be required. And the second issue is where there is a 5-year delay, prejudice should be presumed as inherent in the delay. And it's important to emphasize in this case that 2 amicus briefs have been filed. We are concerned in this case with a 5-year delay. We are not concerned with a 1-year delay, a 2-year delay. This case presents a 5-year delay. The demand rule is applied in this case is subject to attack on 2 grounds. This court has consistently held that any waiver of a constitutional right must be voluntary and intelligent, knowing, and that it will not accept a passive waiver.
That assumes your answer, doesn't it? That assumes that the right to speedy trial exists without the demand.
This is correct, Your Honor.
And the Supreme Court in Beavers v. Haubert, H-A-U-B-E-R-T, Beavers, B-E-A-V-E-R-S, versus Haubert, that the right is consistent with delays depending upon circumstances. Those circumstances were defined further in a case called Pollard v. U.S. Pollard v. U.S. And as education and critical thinking is always a key component of Light 'Em Up, hey, don't take my word for it. Search it out for yourself. Investigate. Barker v. Wingo can be found at 407 U.S. 514 1972. That's 407 U.S. 514-1972, and Beavers v. Hobbard can be found at 198 U.S. 77, 1904, as well as Pollard v. U.S. can be found at 384 Federal Supplement 304 MDALA 1974. That's the 384th Federal Supplement 304 MDALA, short for Alabama, 1974. And as we go forward, it is crucially important that we point out that there are four factors of a speedy trial that must be considered to determine if there is a Sixth Amendment speedy trial violation identified by the court in Barker v. Wingo. And again, those are the length of the delay, the reasons for the delay, the accused's demand for a speedy trial, and the prejudice to the accused. Now, we've covered a lot of ground in a very short period of time. Let's tap the clutch, shift gears for a moment, and focus some on the background in the Terry and Dunn case. The Choctaw Sun Advocate carried this newspaper article on December 4th, 2019. It read, "Four individuals, including three adults and one juvenile, have been taken into custody in connection with the murder of a Butler man on Monday night. According to Butler Public Safety Director Jimmy Huckabee, two males, Ollie Curtis III, 23, and Terry and Dunn, 19, at the time, have been arrested on capital murder charges in the death of Brandon Howard, who was fatally shot at Bedford Pines Apartments on Vanity Fair Drive just before 9 p.m. on December 2nd. Curtis was taken into custody in Butler with no bond set. Dunn was apprehended by authorities in Huntsville. LeJasmine Luckett, 18, was arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit robbery, first degree. She was transported to the Marengo County Jail with bond set at $40,000. A 14-year-old female has also been charged with conspiracy to commit robbery, first degree, and is being held at the juvenile facility in Bay Minette. The investigation is being conducted by the Butler Police Department and Choctaw County Sheriff's Department. Jimmy Huckabee is asking the public to help provide information that may help with the investigation." He went on to say, "We are seeking information, whether it is something large or small. If there's anything that anyone may have seen at the apartments that night, we need to know about it." Terrien has been charged with capital murder, which is by far the most serious of violent crimes in Alabama. It's a Class A felony, carrying with it a potential 10 years to life sentence or even a possible penalty of death. Typically speaking, a defendant or individual charged or suspected of capital murder involves allegations where that individual planned and possessed premeditation to commit murder. However, there are a number of capital offenses other than premeditated murder. According to Alabama law, specifically Alabama Code 13A-5-40, capital offenses include murder by the defendant during a robbery in the first degree or an attempt thereof committed by the defendant. Interestingly enough, a person can be charged with capital murder in Alabama and many other jurisdictions without having killed a single solitary person. On December 4th, 2023, some 6 months from now, Terry and Dunn will have been held 4 years without a trial. He currently has been held 1,281 days in pretrial detention. Now, I know that this sounds like something that only happens at Camp X-Ray at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, but this is sweet home Alabama we're talking about. We believe that every U.S. citizen ought to be alarmed at the amount of time that has elapsed between the arrest of this young Alabama man and the still uncertain date of his trial. Dr. Martin Luther King once said, "Justice delayed is justice denied." 3.5 years later, how does the system permit a person to fall through the cracks like this? How does the system permit justice to be perverted to such a degree? The sad truth is that this happens and continues to happen time after time after time, and it happens with regularity to black and brown people and poor Caucasians. The system isn't broken, it's racist and classist, run through with inequality in every stage of the criminal justice system, from policing to prosecutorial decisions, pretrial release processes, sentencing, you name it, correctional discipline, and even reentry. Blacks make up approximately 13.6% of the U.S. population, yet they make up 38% of those in prison and or jail. Black people represent 53% of the 3,200 exonerations listed in the National Registry of Exonerations. Judging from exonerations, innocent black Americans are 7 times more likely than white Americans to be falsely convicted of serious crimes. You know, when I lived and worked in Washington, D.C. back in the mid-90s, I recall vividly, I was in an elevator with 2 lawyers, and I overheard one say to the other, "In this case, and in all cases, justice comes to he who can pay for it the longest." I gotta tell you, a truer statement could never have been said. Hey, we'd love to think that Terry and Dunn's case was an anomaly, so rare as to make people wonder why are we devoting so much attention to it. But the facts do not support such a belief. The U.S. criminal justice system has become a system where the vast majority in the high 90 percentile plead out before going to trial. And whether the accused actually did the crime, or if the state can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, doesn't really matter all that much anymore. Consider the horrific case of Kalief Browder in New York City. Kalief Browder was 16 years old when he was sent to Rikers Island, an infamous detention center in New York City, on a charge of stealing a backpack. Unable to pay the $3,000 bail set in his case, Browder spent more than 1,000 days there awaiting trial, including 700 days in solitary confinement, because he refused to plead guilty to a crime he didn't commit, as is the case with Terry and Dunn. Over the years, he rejected numerous guilty plea deals that would have allowed him to escape what he said were savage conditions at the prison. He described instances of violent beatings and torment at the hands of other inmates and guards. He said he was starved and kept in filthy surroundings, and he spoke of intolerable mental anguish suffered at the hands of prosecutors who repeatedly delayed his trial in the Bronx's infamously overburdened court system. While awaiting the basic American right of a speedy trial, Kalief had 31 court dates before 8 different judges during his 3 years in jail. Despite New York's so-called speedy trial statute, which says that the people must be ready for trial within 6 months for felony charges, 90 days for Class A misdemeanors, 60 days for Class B misdemeanors, and 30 days for non-criminal violations. Accused of stealing a backpack, after prosecutors finally dropped the charges in 2013, admitting after all that time that they had no evidence connecting Browder to the alleged robbery, Browder earned his GED and began attending community college. But in 2015, after 3 psychiatric hospitalizations and 2 previous suicide attempts, he hanged himself. Browder's story was documented by the New Yorker magazine and has been the focus of intense discussions in our criminal justice and forensic science classes prior to the end of this semester. Yusuf Salam, one of the Central Park 5 who were arrested, charged, and convicted of attacking joggers in New York's iconic Central Park, only to be exonerated over a decade later, said that conditions at Rikers Island are inhumane, especially in solitary, which is imposed for minor infractions, including having an extra Bible in your cell. Those impactful years when Kalief Browder was on Rikers Island damaged him physically, emotionally, and spiritually beyond repair, Salam said. "I was in solitary for 2 weeks, and you can definitely go mad. I had to sign the New Yorker articles and a Netflix documentary series entitled Time, the Kalief Browder Story, to students in our criminal justice classes." Kalief Browder's plight resulted from a perfect storm of systemic problems and inequities. Kalief's story is tragic, but it exists as a lesson to us all. His story illuminates issues of classism, racism, corruption, and a criminal justice system that simply is not working. And as we said, it is hardly unique, sad to say. Sarah Bellow, a 40-year-old single mother, had to wait 1,166 days for a misdemeanor assault charge against her to be dismissed. In the meantime, she lost her New Jersey nursing license and was suspended from her job as a home health aide. Thousands of Bronx residents were found to be waiting as long and longer, and those whose cases did go to trial wound up waiting an average of 642 days for a non-jury trial and 827 days for a jury trial. New York legislators, to their credit, sought to remedy this situation, passing Caliph's Law, which sought to ensure that a statement of readiness for trial by the state is real by tying it to discovery requirements, requiring the people to possess evidence that they are in fact ready for trial, while allowing for flexibility when the facts merit additional time. The bill passed the Assembly but died in the Senate. New York City has since banned solitary confinement for individuals younger than 21 and committed itself to closing Rikers Island, though it still remains open. The state passed Raise the Age legislation, which sought to treat 16 and 17-year-olds like children by raising the age of criminal responsibility from 16 to 18. New York City has also been active in reforming the cash bail system, which has resulted in significant decreases in the number of persons held in jail pending court proceedings, and contrary to what critics have argued, the city's return to court rate is 86% versus about 75% nationally. Still, far too many people are in jail nationwide simply for being too poor to post bail. The entire apparatus of criminal prosecutions would benefit from a more concrete definition of what length of time constitutes a speedy trial, with dismissal of charges not just a theoretical outcome, but one that would force prosecutors looking for convictions to pad their resumes to honor both the spirit and the letter of the Sixth Amendment guarantee to a speedy trial as a matter of routine practice. This would give rise to less frivolous appeals, thereby reducing the workload of the courts and allowing for a speedier determination for defendants. We believe that these delays in Terry and Dunn's case by the state of Alabama to have been intentional, purposeful, prejudicial, and oppressive, and that not only is this a violation of Tarion's 6th and 14th Amendment rights, but also his 8th Amendment right as it pertains to cruel and inhumane punishment, as well as his human rights. Actions akin to the same style and manner in which the U.S. government holds prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. But the sad fact is that nobody cares, when the truth is everyone should care. Browder's case was irregular and extremely exceptional because he repeatedly resisted and was unwavering in his defense of his innocence. He refused to plead guilty. It was beyond every inch of his being, foreign to him. The system failed him. From the outset, the sitting judge set his bail too high at $3,000. Was it reasonable to worry that the young man who had yet to graduate from high school was a genuine flight risk? Hardly at all, I submit. Browder, like Dunn, was denied the right to a speedy trial because the prosecution, without end, repeatedly asked for postponement after postponement. All the while, no one advocated for their release during the years of these delays. Had he gone the easy route, pleading out, like the prosecutor expects and wants everyone to do, it would most likely have reduced the time he spent in jail. But at how high a cost? When one considers the many obstacles that U.S. society puts in the way of those of our fellow citizens with criminal convictions, this is the price of justice in America for black, brown, and poor white people. Both Browder and Dunn, both young black men, were effectively punished for exercising their constitutional right to have a trial. Research shows that juveniles are more likely than adults to plead guilty to a crime they didn't commit for many reasons, including but not limited to the fact that they are more susceptible to pressure from prosecutors and less aware of their rights and the consequences of pleading guilty. While some 98% of cases plead out, plea deals are more practical for some defendants than others because they can return to school, get back to work, and it permits some the chance to avoid a permanent criminal record. But far too many innocent people take the deal because the high cost of going to court risks too much. The trial tax, as it is called, the risk of a long prison sentence if convicted versus much shorter time if they plea. What would you do if you knew you were innocent? Would you take a deal and come home sooner, or risk it all and stand on your principles? It can be a terrible dilemma, deciding to plead guilty out of fear of what's to come if they don't plead guilty, regardless of the strength of the evidence in the case. We all only have one life. It is best spent when you are calling the shots, not when you're a ward of the state in a 12-foot by 7-foot cell. The criminal justice system requires a full body-off restoration, and if it doesn't start now, today, we are falling behind, and we may never catch up. Hey, I'm Phil Rizzo, and you've got Light 'Em Up.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. Want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty. I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes, and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled LGHTEMUP. All one word. That's L1GHTEMUP. All one word.